Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this November the 8th on the West Coast, now November the 9th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. And we would also like to welcome those listening around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network. I got to spend 2 hours with you folks this afternoon, along with my good friend, former U.S. Marine Drew Malone Raines III, and we had a great time. In fact, I played a clip on Drew's show, and I feel that it's worth playing on my own show, number one. Drew felt that this was a very important clip. It really describes the political situation we are in the United States today. This is something that we've been harping on for a number of years on this show and on other shows as well. Even my guest has harped on the same topic. Before we bring him on, we're going to share this with you. This is a bit that you may recognize from 1982. This message is 28 years old and still applies today. It's called the Lie Detector Politician.
These are great. What do we have? Are we going to the sketch now?
Yes.
Okay, since we've been on the air, we've had, I think, 8 presidential elections.
Right.
Do you believe that? Since 1962. And we did a sketch, I guess this is about 1982, right? About 8 years ago. Shows you still, people still don't trust politicians so much. This is pretty well true today as it was in 82. Watch this.
Good afternoon. There, as you know, have been charges alleged by the media and by my opponent that I have made false statements. You and the media have challenged me to prove that these allegations are unfounded by appearing at this televised press conference and answering your questions while hooked up to a lie detector machine. I'm going to ask Officer Dennehy of the Polygraph Division of the Los Angeles Police Department to come out here and please explain this procedure. Sergeant Dennehy?
This is a standard polygraph machine. You place this around the wrist, so how it works is, if the subject responds with a falsehood, you will hear this sound. Good luck.
Thank you, Sergeant. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm delighted to be here. I don't mind being here. I was forced to be here. I will take the first question. Yes.
Congressman, your opponent says that you've distorted certain facts about your background.
That is not true. I was born Philip Cabot Swarthmore III. Philip Cabot Swarthmore II. My name is Stinky Frostheimer.
Congressman.
Yes.
The charge has been made that you falsified your educational background.
I graduated from Harvard University. I went 2 years to Harvard. 1 year at Harvard. I took a summer session at Harvard. I was held back in the 8th grade. All right, the 4th grade.
Congressman, it appears to me you've taken every opportunity during this campaign to slander the character of your opponent.
Nonsense. I feel my opponent is a decent man. He's an okay man. He's a man. He's bisexual. Yes.
Isn't it true that you won't subsidize heating bills for our senior citizens this winter?
Absolutely not. No one is more concerned about our senior citizens than I am. There may be some small cutbacks. Some big cutbacks. They're going to freeze their...
Congressman, it's been alleged that your major contributors are corporate fat cats.
That is not true. All of my contributions come from the small working man, from the middle class. It's all from the mafia.
Congressman, what's your position on equal rights for women?
My position on equal rights for women. I'm glad you asked that. I look forward toward a day when all Americans are equal, regardless of sex. I'm looking toward a day when they're kind of equal. I'm looking at your boobs.
Congressman.
Yes.
There have been rumors that you're having marital problems.
Nonsense. I've been happily married for 25 years. I've never been with another woman. Once. All right. Last night I had 6 Chinese girls on a forklift truck. Are you satisfied?
Yes. Are you a bribe-taking, gay, communist, peeping Tom, wife-beater?
No. 2 out of 5 ain't bad. 4 out of 5 ain't bad. In conclusion, if I'm elected, I'll be the most honest candidate ever elected. You can trust me.
And that was the late Johnny Carson on his Tonight Show, the lie detector politician. With that, I'm going to get a response from tonight's guest. He is a PhD and a naturopath. He is an author, journalist, investigative journalist. He has his own talk show on internet radio, heard on the microeffect.com. His show is called The Story Behind the Story, and he's somewhat of a regular Monday night guest on my show this year, my good friend, Dr. A. Chu Ott. Dr. Ott, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Don. Yeah, nobody did it quite like Johnny. they just broke the mold with him. And, of course, you and I both grew up with Tonight Show and the original cast of Saturday Night Live, and there's never been anything to equal it.
Yes, that's true. Isn't it remarkable how that skit was written, of course, to evoke laughs, and we laugh about this, but it's a serious matter now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, we got to have that hooked up with they ought to just not just honk, it gives them a shock to the genitals. That'll wake them up, and they maybe they'll have some honesty going on.
Now, you couldn't see the video, but he was occasionally reaching over and slapping the machine.
Oh. Yeah, there's some of his best bloopers were some of the funniest, where he just tells it like it is, and we don't need to go into that. But you can just imagine some of the stuff he got away with it for the most part. Yeah. Except for, I think, Raquel Welch sued him. And I think Arnold Palmer's wife sued him as well.
Oh, I remember that show. I remember it had to do with how she gave him good luck.
Got prepped him for his big golf tournaments.
Yeah exactly. Yeah. That's well. We won't mention that on this show. We have children that listen in certain parts of the world. So.
Oh golly, yes. Yeah, that, and as you were talking about that, I'm sure Drew got a good laugh out of that, and so did his audience earlier. But this just came in from a friend to me, and I'd like to share it as well. It's a true story, actual letter sent to a man in Pennsylvania named Ryan DeVries. He has quite a large estate there in Pennsylvania. It's of course, with anything, even if it's private property, you can't do anything to change the wetland structures. You know that. Mm-hmm. The environmental problems are immense. And worse, you seem to have a lot of neighbors that are people just walking by and see something, and they just don't have a clue. And this is even more so out here in the West with people visiting from the East, they are incensed enough to sponsor such ludicrous bills as one that's actually entitled Rape on the Range, where they were just incensed that a range bull would come around and have relations with a bunch of heifers. How dare he? That's just absolutely indecent. So the bill was introduced that there would only be, you know, one heifer per bull, and they wouldn't just go around doing his business with all these different heifers. Can you believe that? It actually was a bill that went in. Well,
that's a lot of bull, then.
That's a lot of bull. This is an actual letter that was sent to this Mr. Ryan DeVries. He had a pond on his property, and I'm sure there were some busybodies that complained to the Department of Environmental Quality in the state of Pennsylvania. They sent him this letter. It's an official state letterhead, state of Pennsylvania, to Mr. DeVries, subject DEQ, file number 97-59-002. So they gave it an official file number. They actually had they gave a GPS coordinate of the specific property in the section 20 of Lycoming County, Pennsylvania. Dear Mr. DeVries, the letter says, it has come to the attention of the Department of Environmental Quality that there has been recent unauthorized activity on the above referenced parcel of property. You have been certified as the legal landowner and or contractor who did the following unauthorized activity, : construction and maintenance of two wood debris dams across the outlet stream of Spring Pond. And they sent him pictures of these unauthorized dams, two wood debris dams. The paragraph next says a permit must be issued prior to the start of this type of activity. A review of the department's files shows that no such permits have been issued. Therefore, the department has determined that this activity is in violation of Part 301, Inland Lakes and Streams of the Natural Resource and Environmental Protection Act, Act 451 of the Public Acts of 1994, being section yada, yada, yada of the Pennsylvania Complied Laws, annotated. The department has been informed that one or both of the dams partially failed during a recent rain event, causing debris and flooding at downstream locations. We find that dams of this nature are inherently hazardous and cannot be permitted. The department therefore orders you to cease and desist all activities at this location and to restore the stream to a free flow condition by removing all wood and brush forming the dams from the stream channel. All restoration work shall be completed no later than January 31st, 2010. Please notify this office when the restoration has been completed so that a follow-up site inspection may be scheduled by our staff. Failure to comply with this request or any further unauthorized activity on the site may result in this case being referred for elevated enforcement action. Now keep in mind, this is private property, titled property, ladies and gentlemen. We anticipate and would appreciate your full cooperation in this matter. Please feel free to contact me at this office if you have any questions. Sincerely, David L. Price, District Representative and Water Management Division.
And his answer is classic.
Yes. Here's the actual response sent back to by Mr. DeVries. Reason to file. Dear Mr. Price, your certified letter dated 11-17-09 has been handed to me. I am the legal landowner, but not the contractor at 2088 Daggett Lane, Trout Run, Pennsylvania. A couple of beavers are in the state unauthorized process of constructing and maintaining two wood debris dams across the outlet stream of my spring pond. While I did not pay for, authorize, nor supervise their dam project, I think they would be highly offended that you call their skillful use of nature's building materials debris. I would like to challenge your department to attempt to emulate their damn project anytime and or any place you choose. I believe I can safely state there is no way you could ever match their damn skills, their damn resourcefulness, their damn ingenuity, their damn persistence, their damn determination, and or their damn work ethic. Then he has two pictures of the offending rodents. These are the beavers slash contractors you are seeking. As to your request, I do not think the beavers are aware that they must first fill out a dam permit prior to the start of this type of dam activity. My first dam question to you is, one, are you trying to discriminate against my spring pond beavers? Or two, do you require all beavers throughout this state to conform to said dam request? If you are not discriminating against these particular beavers, through the Freedom of Information Act, I request completed copies of all those other applicable beaver dam permits that have been issued. Perhaps we will see if there really is a dam violation of Part 301, Inland Lakes and Streams of the Natural Resources and Environmental Protection Act of 1994. I have several dam concerns. My first dam concern is, aren't the beavers entitled to legal representation? The spring pond beavers are financially destitute and are unable to pay for said representation, so the state will have to provide them with a dam lawyer. The department's dam concern that either one or both of the dams failed during a recent rain event causing flooding is proof that this is a natural occurrence, which the department is required to protect. In other words, we should leave the spring pond beavers alone rather than harassing them and calling them damn names. If you want the dam stream restored to a dam free flow condition, please contact the beavers. But if you are going to arrest them, they obviously did not pay any attention to your damn letter, they being unable to read or write English. In my humble opinion, the spring pond beavers have a right to build their unauthorized dams as long as the sky is blue, the grass is green, and the water flows downstream. They have more dam rights than I do to live and enjoy spring pond. If the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Protection lives up to its name, it should protect the natural resources, beavers, and their environment, beavers' dams. So far as the beavers and I are concerned, this damn case can be referred for more elevated enforcement action right now. Why wait until 131-210? The spring pond beavers may be under the dam ice by then, and there will be no way for you or your damn staff to contact slash harass them. In conclusion, I would like to bring to your attention a real environmental quality and a health problem in the area. It is the bears. Bears are actually defecating in our woods. I definitely believe you should be persecuting the defecating bears and leave the beavers alone. If you are going to investigate the beaver dam, however, watch your damn step. The bears are not careful where they dump. Being able to comply with your damn request and being unable to contact you on your damn answering machine, I'm sending the response to your damn office. Thank you, Ryan DeVries and the damn beavers. No response from the damn environmental quality. I just think about people that are in the situation across America where they are having to jump through all of these blessed hoops, so to speak, you know, when it just doesn't make a lot of sense logically. And this is a classic example.
Sure. Dee, thank you for sharing that story with us, too. I at one point, I had that posted on my website, believe it or not.
Ah, uh-huh.
I think it wore it out. But that is a hilarious story and very witty. And do you think the government got it, though? When you think of, you know, did they see the innuendo in that?
Oh, I don't know. It's just to even have that letter sent out is ridiculous. They had pictures taken of the wood debris dams. For heaven's sakes, don't they know what a beaver dam is?
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a topic that you discussed on a past show, the documentary film Corporation Nation.
Yes.
And I got a download of that, and I've been watching that, and actually a couple of other really well-produced documentaries, one by Gordon Phillips, The Truth Behind the Income Tax, is quite amazing. It compares the government statements or the agency statements as to the nature of the tax, and it just Phillips just tears it apart from one end to the other, using their answers, their stock answers to people across the country, and it points out the corruption and the double standard that's there. I recommend that if you haven't had a chance to look at it. And more even appropriate, I think, for the time, well, not that any of these topics are one, you know, more important than the other, James Collier, who had written the book The Stealing of America, has a, well, I should say that there is a documentary of about 57 and a half minutes, an interview where he shares a lot of the information and some film that he made of an election in Florida some years ago. This was back in 1996 when this interview was made. And he shows the corruption that was going on in the back rooms after the polling places closed. He went in there with the camera, and he was talking to the people who were running the operation. They had the League of Women Voters sitting at a table punching out cards. In fact, it was quite obvious that they were replacing cards. And he documented all of this. James Collier and his brother Kenneth were murdered in 1998, likely from having exposed this corruption. But he gives a very, I should say, he gave a very interesting presentation on the whole issue of vote fraud, including going out there and capturing the fraud on film. And a very real discussion about the tapes that he turned over to the FBI, where they're agreeing that there's actual vote fraud.
Now, what year was this, Don?
1996.
Mm-hmm.
Is when the interview came out.
Well, last Tuesday, as you know, there were a few surprises in the midterms, but the biggest one to me, I discussed this on Drew's show a little bit last Wednesday, is the exit polling of the Harry Reid race there in Nevada. The exit polls, you know, for whatever good they are, showed a 60% victory to his opponent, but again, here's the metropolitan Las Vegas area that's all computerized. The Diebold is king. It's just funny that there was quite a lengthy blackout, power outage,
mm-hmm.
and there were, you know, who knows what happened with that, but here Reid comes in and is made the winner when all the exit polling and all of the, you know, all the victory pointed to a loss. I just kind of find it strange that he would come out the victor that way.
And he lost to a woman, as I understand, too.
Well, he should have lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't.
Well, do you
officially.
Anything is going to be done about this? She asked for a recount.
I have not heard. I don't know. It's close enough that she should qualify for it, but the point is, how do you recall or how do you recount electronic votes? It's still, you know, it's up for, how do you certify what was actually pulled on that lever?
Yeah. Well, we know that that's an issue. The recount is one thing. The other thing would be to do the election over again in that district. But, you know, do it. How can it be done?
Well, it's a statewide election, so they'd have to do it statewide. It's not, the state Senate has every precinct that would vote. And some of the more rural areas, of course, had traditional, ballots. But the place where he won was the inner city, Las Vegas and Reno, which had the electronic tabs. That just reeks to me. Of course, you have enough money paid, you have enough clout with what I describe as mafia dons, and what is Las Vegas and Reno but mafia havens. You can surely make the election come out there any way they want. And that's always been the hallmark of certain politicians in Nevada. Always they are mafia controlled. They just are. And that's Nevada, Las Vegas politics. And it's just, isn't it funny that the Mac Daddy out of Chicago has Reed's ear and almost like a Siamese twin connection with him.
Mm-hmm. That very topic was a major part of the Godfather 2 movie. That corruption between the mafia and the senator from Nevada. If you remember.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty much taken off of, they changed the names about all the change of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So, you bet.
Well, and we've heard reports of this kind of corruption in a lot of other places as well. Or should we be surprised that percentage-wise more dead people voted in this election than I know? Any prior to now, some dead people voted five times, not just once.
Well, it's a zombie bus.
Yeah.
Bring him to the polling places. And then, don't they stink a little bit when they come walking in?
Yeah, and they started a series on AMC. It's an AMC home production. Of course, AMC is, I think, controlled by Time Warner Cable. So there's your intelligence agency connections right there. And the show is called The Walking Dead. This is another one of these zombie movies.
Mm-hmm.
They're dead, and they're going around trying to eat people. And you can shoot them and kill them. They didn't die the first time they came back. It's a copycat show, which is mimicking the movie, the original movie, Night of the Living Dead or something like that it's called. Where, I don't know if you call it a C or a D movie. You got a bunch of people walking around with drool on their face and,
Well, they just went out and filmed the Senate chambers in Washington, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. But, you ask yourself, why do they put this stuff out there? Does it create fear? Do people really think that that's real, or is it just a diversion? Or are they sending a message, like we're the Walking Dead?
Good point.
I tend to look a little deeper than the surface to see what the redeeming qualities of a show like that is, may be. But in this case, I don't see any other than it's entertainment. And, they would flash a crawl across the screen in the weeks prior to this while they were busy showing satanic and demonic films for the weeks leading up to Halloween. that if you're reading this message, then you must have survived the deadly virus that is producing something like they're, I'm paraphrasing it, producing a race of beings called the Walking Dead. You know, stay tuned. They would run this like a news item. And the level of mind control and brainwashing is just off the charts. And it really all points to the corporatization and the privatization of what used to be part of what was considered the public trust. Any comments on that?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, getting back to the first of the show and the out of control bureaucracies that just seem to need to create some type of criminal activity for them to justify their existence. The comprehensive annual financial reports and what Clint Richardson showed in that in his documentary, I critiqued it for him, gave him some positive feedback. I said you really need to answer this question. I submit, and we can just put it out there for your listeners and for you, Don. I back in 2003, I received a video tape of Walter Burian exposing the anomalies in these comprehensive financial reports. Keep in mind, there's 180,000 corporate government agencies that file CAFRs, the annual financial reports, and so it's just a massive amount. And so I said, well, I'll check this out and see if it's accurate. And here in Utah, and I went into the, just as he explained, you could do go into the state offices and ask for them. I got 5 years of CAFRs. I think it was 1996 through 2002. Well, what I explained to Clint is, you've got to follow these year by year by year. As Clint says so well in the show, they're focusing on budgets as being the operating financial statement. You know, oh, we've got a budget shortfall. We're going to have to raise taxes or cut services. That's standard across the country right now. When not nine people out of ten, one person out of ten would ever understand that this annual financial report is a true picture of the entities, the corporate entities' financial wealth. Now, Don, you as a business owner, and you know that when you have a balance sheet, you carry your year end, whether it's a fiscal year or a calendar year, you carry the balances forward. What was amazing, at least in the CAFRs I analyzed in different municipalities in the state here in Utah, 1 year, for instance, had a net revenue after all expenses, everything paid out I think it was, say, $15 million, where the starting of the next year's CAFR, this $50 million for the previous year, or $50 billion in the case of some of the larger, more profitable CAFRs, this money just, I couldn't personally see where it ever got carried over to the succeeding year.
They started from zero the following
year. It's always starting from zero.
Yeah.
So the question I asked Clint is, who owns these for-profit corporations we call municipalities or state government or even the federal government? They are all incorporated. As such, by definition, a corporate structure must have stockholder, at least one stockholder of record, and thus the stockholder of record is the one who takes the profit.
And it has to have officers, too. By most state laws, you have to have a president, a vice president, a secretary, and a treasurer at a minimum.
But these incorporated areas of government, nobody really knows who that is, do you? I mean, where do you find out who owns the stock of Cleveland, Ohio, in your neck of the woods? The municipality, which is a corporate entity. Who profits from the percentage of tax base? Who profits from the charging of services? Who charges? Who benefits from the collection of traffic tickets or big hefty fines of violation? It's like this DEQ letter I read. The increased enforcement, if the cease and desist is ignored, is in the many tens of thousands, maybe $100,000 worth of fines levied. Where do these fines go to? They go to the corporate entity. And it's on the bottom line at the end of the year, a profit. And yet it starts at zero the next year. Where does this money go? And who really takes that end, that net profit? And furthermore, I've seen maybe 100 CAFRs in my research, Don, and I have yet to see one municipality operate in the red. They can't do it. Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
They just aren't structured to have a defeat or a loss in that year. They're just not able to function. But they all had substantial net gains.
Well, you can ask the question, where does the money that the court takes in go to? Who signs that money away? And in most cases, it would be the judge, who is the banker for this secret entity. And then, you know, who pays the taxes on that?
Because the courts are agents of either the state or the, in the case of a federal court, the federal government. So,
or a secret government or a secret financial entity.
You know, about 3 years ago, I was about this time of the year, Don, this is another example of insanity and where government is just so far disjointed from reality. We have here in northern Utah the first actual migratory bird refuge. It's called the Bear River Bird Refuge. It was established, I believe, back in Teddy Roosevelt's day. It was the first of its kind. Utah, the Great Salt Lake system, the Bear River system, is just a magnet for all these migrating waterfowl. It's just an amazing sight this time of the year to see literally millions of waterfowl in the Great Salt Lake marshes. Well, I had a run-in with some of these feds on a hunting area boundary, which I had marked with GPS from their head offices, and so I was hunting where they told me my GPS reading would be. The officer that was harassing me had no idea where the boundaries were, so he ordered us to move 100 yards further to the south, which we did the following day. And he comes out and proceeds to write us both a ticket for violating, you know, hunting on the closed area. Even though we had done what he had said, he still maintained we were still in a boundary dispute. Long story short, it's a federal ticket, and I wanted to have my day in court, so to speak, have him declare on what subjective grounds he set the boundaries when I have the GPS marked? Well, when you get back and analyze the ticket, you can't go in, first of all, and represent yourself. You must have an attorney, even for this little ticket. And it must be a federally licensed attorney. And then the only place you can air a non-guilty grievance is to go back to the city of Atlanta, Georgia, to have the case heard. So it's designed, you just really can't spend thousands of dollars to fight a $150 piece of garbage ticket. Again, it's money, revenue generated to who knows what pocket it goes to.
It's legalized extortion is what it is.
Another form of hidden tax. Yeah. And the ticket's very clear, the horror of not paying that on schedule included a federal arrest warrant, investigation. This is right there on the ticket, that they would turn your name over to the Internal Revenue Service for investigation. All of this absolute fear-mongering, harassment by the so-called servants of our federal government. Unbelievable. It was an unbelievably eye-opening experience.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to get you off track here because this is important. I have a clip that if I play just the first few minutes of this. This is a two-hour presentation from Gordon Phillips, The Truth Behind the Income Tax.
Mm-hmm.
I want to demonstrate the ignorance of the nature of our government to the listening audience. Some people know this already. They've been listening to the show for a long time, and they're aware of this, but it bears repeating. So if you bear with me,
mm-hmm.
We'll listen to the first part of Gordon Phillips production.
You're asking me?
That's a good question.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't really know.
Democracy.
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 I have no idea.
Democracy.
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 Democracy, yeah.
What form?
What form of government do we have in the United States? What form of government do we have in the United States? We have a democracy.
Democracy.
Democracy. Democracy?
Democracy.
Would I be surprised to find that we don't have a democracy?
Yes. No.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I would be surprised.
I would be very surprised.
Ooh, when was the last time I said the pledge? When's the last time I said the Pledge of Allegiance?
About 8 years ago.
Oh, probably a year ago.
Probably 21 years ago.
Do I remember the words? I think I do.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of
the United States of America.
And to the republic.
For which it stands.
And to the what?
Republic.
And to the what?
Republic.
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 The Republic.
That's right. And we are a republic.
Republic. Republic. Oh.
The republic.
The difference.
What is the difference between a democracy and a republic? What is the difference between a republic and a democracy?
I can't remember.
That's a good question.
Don't know the answer.
Oh, good Lord.
Whoa!
You got me there. I don't know the answer to that.
I'm Gordon Phillips. You know, the truth is a funny thing. You can distort it. You can even suppress it for a while. Sometimes you discover that it's hiding in plain view all along. But eventually, the truth always comes out. The problem with the truth is that once you learn it, you can't unlearn it. Winston Churchill once said, "Most people sometime in their lives stumble across truth. Most jump up, brush themselves off, and hurry on about their business as if nothing had happened. What you are about to learn will lead you into areas you may never have been before. If you're a person who has always believed everything your government tells you, then this tape will very likely forever change the way you view your government. If you would rather not learn the truth in order to not have to hold yourself accountable for knowing it, or have to deal with the consequences of putting it into action, or have to deal with your conscience should you decide to ignore the truth, then perhaps you should stop this tape right now, rewind it, and pass it along to someone else to listen to." So let's get started. I'll be covering three broad areas. The first is the symbiotic relationship between our banking system and the income tax, and is crucial to your understanding of the real reason why we even have an income tax. The second area will cover the surprisingly limited authority of the federal government to tax the citizen of the 50 states of the Union. And the third area will discuss the solution. I'll introduce you to a patriotic organization of thousands of members nationwide who have learned to free themselves from a lifetime of Pavlovian conditioning and bondage to the IRS through the fear that stems from ignorance of the written law. According to Internal Revenue Manual, Chapter 1100, Section 1111.1, titled Mission,
"The purpose of the IRS is to encourage and achieve the highest possible degree of voluntary compliance in accordance with the tax laws and regulations."
IRS Publication 1, titled Your Rights as a Taxpayer, states,
"As a taxpayer, you have the right to be treated fairly, professionally, promptly, and courteously by Internal Revenue Service employees. Our goal at the IRS is to protect your rights so that you will have the highest confidence in the integrity, efficiency, and fairness of our tax system."
Well, what do you think? Do you have the highest degree of public confidence in the integrity, efficiency, and fairness of the IRS? Are you treated fairly, professionally, promptly, and courteously by IRS employees? And what exactly does voluntary compliance really mean? Mortimer Kaplan, former IRS commissioner, stated in the 1975 Internal Revenue Audit Manual,
"Our tax system is based on individual self-assessment and voluntary compliance."
Meaning, assess yourself and volunteer to comply, or we'll seize your property and you may go to jail. For years, the IRS has ruled the American people in a manner many feel is equal only to the Soviet KGB. Fear, bluff, and deception have been the IRS' major weapons. Once it has targeted its victims for audit, investigation, assessment, and seizure, the IRS will try to take three things away from them: their money, their time, and their reputation. Yet IRS Commissioner Margaret Milner Richardson, in her Dear Taxpayer preface to the 1994 Form 1040 instruction workbook, stated, and I quote,
"I want you to know that the S in IRS represents a commitment to serve you."
Now, wasn't that heartwarming? It reminds me of the Twilight Zone episode in which apparently benevolent aliens land on Earth and donate a book to mankind titled To Serve Man. When translated, it turns out to be a cookbook. Ms. Richardson goes on to list under customer service standards,
"Our goal is to answer your questions accurately."
Well, that certainly came as news to me, considering that the IRS will readily admit that it takes no responsibility for the accuracy of the information given out over the phone by its personnel to members of the public who call to get their questions answered. Of the many people I know, including myself, who have ever written a simple question such as, "Dear IRS, could you please cite for me the code section requiring a citizen working within the 50 states to file an income tax return?" to this date, not a single one of us has ever received a single answer, let alone an accurate answer. The IRS simply ignores all such letters. So much for the S in service. So much for being treated fairly, professionally, promptly, and courteously. So much for protecting our rights. Quoting from IRS in Action, former IRS criminal investigation agent Santo Presti reveals,
"Given the opportunity, the IRS will take the easy way out and grab whatever it can. The IRS does not really care about you or what your future may be.
If the IRS does decide to investigate you, it will interview your friends, family, business associates, clients, and customers, and turn them into informants, paid informants. So did Shirley tell the truth? Apparently not. Former IRS commissioner and former head of the Tax Crime Division at the Department of Justice, Shirley Peterson, stated in a lecture on April 14, 1993, at Southern Methodist University,
8 decades of amendments to the code have produced a virtually impenetrable maze. The rules are unintelligible to most citizens. The rules are equally mysterious to many government employees who are charged with administering and enforcing the law.
The IRS depends not only upon its highly publicized actions, but upon its perceived power in order to instill fear into honest Americans, and to quote the agency itself, to maintain a sense of presence. Again quoting from IRS in Action, Santo Presti writes,
"Fear is the key element for the IRS in achieving its mission. Without fear, the IRS would have a difficult time maintaining our so-called system of voluntary compliance."
Now, we could go on with that. It's very, very interesting. But this is truth, is it not? True?
Oh, absolutely, Don. I mentioned this before a few times, but actually I graduated in accounting in the early 80s with a bachelor degree, and went on to work in the financial sector for a number of years. One of the, you know, when you graduate in accounting, you have to, of course, take tax accounting as a required course and something called intermediate accounting. My tax accounting professor just flat out hated to see me. I had so much, he would tell the class that it's an inexact science, that section that Phillips brings out about voluntary compliance. It again goes to the core of, do we not have a right not to self-incriminate ourselves by declaring incomes, okay, or the definition thereof? And these type of questions I just kept peppering. I said, how can you justify this as this form of self-incrimination? First of all, second of all, there, you know, in the very basic definition section of the course, where we learn and we're tested on the definitions themselves, it just struck me as being absolutely ludicrous that income in the IRS code is literally defined as income.
Yes.
It specifically says income is defined as income from all sources. It's like, talk about confusing. How, you know, you have to define something. Let's define water. Well, water is water.
Yes. Well, constitutionally, that issue, the tax issue, is directed towards corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Not private individuals.
Well, that's the thing, too. I come to find out that private individuals, if they're ever received a banking account, if they've ever received benefits in the form of a Social Security card, guess what? You are given also a corporate number. You are a corporation at that point. And I even found out that your corporation, that you, is actually, the stock is owned by the British East Indies Company, basically the City of England, the City of London, the Rothschilds. Again, that's just an amazing reality when it struck me. So, beginning back to what I was saying, the definition of income is key to understanding the IRS. You got to go to a legal definition, and like Black's Law Dictionary gives us a definition of income. And you find that income is actually an increase. It goes back again to the comprehensive annual financial reports. they zero everything out at the end of the year as far as the money's made. They have an increase, but is there any subject? Are the municipalities and state agencies and corporations, the federal government?
There's no accountability.
There's no accountability. There's no account. There's no taxes paid, for one thing, in their corporations as well, the biggest ones there are. So my point is this: income. If you're being forced to incriminate yourself, my theory that I went all the way through the whole course for three quarters of the whole school year was: does anybody truly have an increase based on the definition of income? You see, Don, you don't go out, if you have $100,000 in a savings account, do you declare that $100,000, that asset, each and every year as income? Of course, if you do, you're stupid. You need your head examined. By the law, any tax preparer with a brain knows that $100,000 passbook savings account, you only declare the income, the increase, the interest on that. Okay, right?
Yes.
So by the same token, the IRS is asking us as human beings with intrinsic net worth, with a value based on our education, based on our work experience, to declare ourselves to be worth nil, zero, zilch, each and every year. The increase is just what we earn. That's absolutely against the laws of basis of accounting 101.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So my theory was, I said, look, it's ignorance that we don't declare ourselves in a form that we manufacture to the IRS, saying we have a certified, notarized statement that based on our work experience, based on our education, we have an intrinsic value to the country, to our city, our town, or whatever worth. Let's say that the median average income of an engineer is $110,000 a year. That's your basis. Now, if you exceed that basis, if you have an increase above that basis, like in your income, your interest income of your passbook account, well, that's different, isn't it?
So, well, there are a couple of issues that come to mind. First of all, the bank or whoever the bank gives the money to has the benefit of all that money interest-free, and they pay us a small percentage. I mean, it's ridiculous what banks pay out for passbook accounts, checking accounts, savings accounts, CDs and annuities and all the other financial products that they sell to their customers. They don't tell us the reality of where the money is or how the money's created, where it comes from. That's a whole issue in and of itself. But you also have another aspect of this whole thing that should you try to make a withdrawal, let's say you have $100,000 in your account, you decide to close out that account with the bank, they come up with all, depending on the product that your money is invested in, you're penalized for taking your money out, even though it's your money. You're penalized for asking for your money. Tell me that's not a fixed monopoly game.
Oh, and let's not forget Senate Bill 4646 that will probably be squirreled away in committee until the recess for Christmas, the 21st or 23rd of December, Don. I challenge listeners to pull that Senate bill and read it like I did and just sit in stunned silence. Ladies and gentlemen, the bill is wants to introduce in 2011 a 1% transaction fee on all banking activities. You go in and cashier payroll check for $5,000, ka-ching, $50 is taken out of your account to go to the federal government as a transaction fee. Every check that you write is going to have a 1% fee going to the federal government. Every time you go to an ATM and withdraw funds, ka-ching, 1%. Every Visa transaction, if you're a merchant, every time you make a sale, you're suddenly the government has 1% piece of the pie. You think there'd be a revolution with healthcare reform? They smoke this one under the radar, which they're planning on doing. It's going to just blow people's minds, Don.
Yeah. Now, in my town, I think it's worth a little bit of discussion. In my town, the prior mayoral administration left a surplus of $2 million, or roughly $2 million, in the general fund. It didn't take them 1 month to deplete that with an incoming Democratic administration. And it's back to old cronyism again.
Mm-hmm.
And most likely a crooked election. There's no reason not to vote in a mayor that did a lot of good for the city and put the city into the black financially. the corruption is off the charts, and it goes directly to the law director and the empire that they set up countywide. It's all and the godfather of the organized crime syndicate in this county is an attorney as well.
Hmm.
And with a firm that specializes in real estate. You see, this keeps going back to the theft of public funds. They don't mention the theft. They take public property and they privatize it. So it's they call it public private participation is what they call it. Hmm. But who gets to see the books of all this money that's made behind the scenes? That's where Walter Burian's work is really important, because he points out the various ways that first of all, that this is not reported or advertised. It's not discussed openly and honestly. And that's what Cliff Richardson brings out in the beginning of Corporation Nation. He's talking to the former head of the GAO, asking him these questions about the true nature of the audits that they do on the government's books. He lied about everything, and it's all on film. So, we're paying tribute to a foreign corporation registered in Puerto Rico. Why do they need to be registered in Puerto Rico, do you think?
Well, it goes back to the Commonwealth laws. Many of them I've traced them back to the U.S. Virgin Islands, which is, again, a British-controlled, the City of London-controlled Commonwealth. It's a part of Great Britain. And, again, it goes back to the whole illegal tax structure. It's not about funding government. It's about control of the people.
Mm-hmm.
The government has the ability to print up all the money they want.
Andrew Hamilton came to the United States on a ship through the British West Indies. And there was a dispute as to whether he was 15 years old or 13 years old, because he couldn't prove how old he was.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Hamilton became the first Secretary of the U.S. Treasury. Kind of interesting fact there.
And sold out, I must say, to the central bank as well.
Sure, sure. I mean, this was a setup from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
From the beginning of the first treasury that we had that was recognized as the sole power with the constitutional authority to print money based on a gold and silver standard. And that it's all become rackets. And this is where the money goes from the courts, goes into that same system.
Right.
It's a trough with funnels that lead to it from different directions. Do you want to comment on that in our closing minute?
Well, that's just it. It's propaganda and brainwashing as a fear-based structure. People just don't get it. The bottom line with my professor was, well, you'll just get your client, if you do this for a client, you just get them in a real bunch of hot water. Well, again, see, there's that fear base. Well, he never could set the record straight as far as my theory and the definitions of Black's Law Dictionary for income itself. And so, you know, again, it's status quo, do what you're told, lockstep, Heil Hitler, and away you go.
Yeah, that term, words, which seem to contradict each other, the word compliance.
Yeah.
The, what would you call it, the act of of obeying a command,
right,
to comply with, to go along with.
Now, non-questioning.
Yeah, without questioning. And compliance is what it is by itself. But they put the word voluntary. Now, in other words, you volunteer. Is that like volunteering into the military?
You volunteer to be brainless, unquestioning, feudal slave.
Yeah. So it's another word game, voluntary compliance. And I've heard that term before. That's used all the time.
It's like same thing as military intelligence. No, just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a couple other things I could say, too. It's doublespeak. It's and that's why they call it codes. You know, I was thinking, somebody mentioned, you publish this book, make sure that you have them put a barcode on it. And I thought, barcode, the bar,
mm-hmm,
and the code. You know, it happens to look like a bar, but is that really what it stands for? Why would you not just use regular numbers? Why does it have to have a barcode? Because there's all kinds of data on who's controlling the companies that receive profits or royalties from products and services that are sold.
Right.
So the barcode is known to whom? That legal system that creates these rules as the game is being played, right in the middle of the game.
Yep.
You know, so... Well, we talked about a lot of different things tonight. Nothing really planned, but this is why we're experiencing bailouts. This is why we're experiencing massive theft. And we're revealing the truth to the dismay of those that have been pulling the wool over everybody's eyes for so many years.
Well, keep on doing what we're doing. That's all I can say is, and just... make sure that you understand the Uniform Commercial Code, the UCC1 as it's called, and really how it takes over and dominates any type of common law structures under the Constitution. So you have to understand the UCC1 to understand the IRS and even the comprehensive annual financial reports fall into line when you understand the ties, of course, to the income tax IRS.
Yes, and those reports fall under either the Freedom of Information Act and or public records requests.
Right.
You can make those requests and actually look at these things for yourself. See if you can make sense out of it, because it's a game.
It's designed to be that way. To even the tax preparers really don't want to dig deep. They just realize that their income stream is dependent upon voluntary compliance as well.
Yes. Well, Drew, we got to say goodnight here.
Yep.
Who's your guest this week? Your show has been cut back to Monday through Wednesday. I know you had Dr. Mike Castle on this evening.
We'll just continue with the Battle Hymn reviews on battlehymn.com tomorrow with Dane Phillips Wednesday. I think we'll have Liz back on, depending on her availability. She's put together quite a book of her experiences that we'll discuss. So,
okay, that's always interesting too for those of you who are want to study mind control, MK Ultra, and some of the things that may be planned for our future.
Right,
Dr. Ott. I want to thank you for being on the show. The website atrueott.com is where you go to read his many articles, and also meminerals.com if you want to check out his goodies. We'll call them goodies.
Very good. Thank you, Don. Appreciate all the work you do. And good night, ladies and gentlemen. Pleasure being on the show tonight.
All right. Good night, Drew. Good night. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and tonight's special guest, Dr. A. True Ott. Want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints over at BBSRadio.com. Seth Hendrick on the sound this evening. Want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me when tomorrow night when my special guest from Argentina will be Mr. Adrian Salbucci. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.